The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Welcome in to our Championship Week edition of the Leach Report rolling out on this Monday. It's Championship Week in college basketball. All the conference tournaments playing out. Well, a couple of them already done. Congratulations to the Murray State Racers, who were the first team to make the field this year for the NCAA tournament. Coming up on the show today, we will talk about Kentucky's loss at Florida, look ahead to the tournament this week out in St. Louis. And we'll do that with our lineup of guests, including Sean Farnham from the SEC Network, Fletcher Page from the Courier-Journal, and we'll also chat with Jen Smith from the Lexington Herald-Leader about the start of spring football practice today, which Jen covers for KentuckySports.com. So that's our guest lineup presented each day on the show by Sleep Outfitters. Our show served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. We appreciate you joining us. You can interact with the show via Twitter @LeachReport. Email, it's leachreport@gmail.com, or you can call 877-904-1080, toll-free anywhere in Kentucky. Wildcat News of the Day is a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. So the Cats lose at Florida 80-67 on Saturday, and forget for a moment how they played, and just look at the fact that, just look at the result, it actually put them in a better spot, I think. I think you'd rather play on Friday afternoon than around 10 o'clock on Friday night and then potentially have to wheel right back the next afternoon. So you've got almost 24 hours between Friday and Saturday games this way if you prevail on Friday. I think the bracket's probably a little more favorable for Kentucky with Auburn losing their big man inside a couple of weeks ago. I think Kentucky... I would expect it'll be Missouri, although I wouldn't count out Georgia getting out there to that quarterfinal game on Friday. But Georgia and Vandy play Wednesday night, then the winner gets Missouri on Thursday, and then the winner from that goes on to meet Kentucky on Friday afternoon. So, all in all, a good bracket for Kentucky, but ultimately for the Cats, it's really not so much who they play or when they play, but how they play that will be this, they'll write the story of their March run. On Saturday, you know, we talk about tournament time, and it's a guards game in college basketball, and I don't think the Kentucky guards were very good on Saturday. Could be for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander that he's, as Cal said, he's had a fantastic year, but didn't have one of his better games on Saturday. Didn't play particularly well the first time against Florida. Remember, he committed to Florida. And the students right behind Mike and I on Saturday really were giving him a hard time. So maybe Florida gets in his head a little bit because he hadn't really played well in either game against the Gators. Wouldn't be the first time that happened to a player. But during the winning streak, Shai and Kwade were almost 4-1 assist to turnovers. Saturday, they were negative on assist to turnovers. I think it was 4 assists and 6 turnovers combined for the two of them on Saturday. So I think that's a big key for Kentucky's success in March. I think not being able to play with that best offensive group for extended stretches hurt Kentucky. Jared Vanderbilt, P.J. Washington couldn't stay out of foul trouble for the most part, and so Kentucky didn't end up getting to play that group together a lot. I think you look at the box score, whether you looked at the game from an eye test or you just looked at the box score, either way you came out with a feeling that that Kentucky team looked like the one that lost 4 straight as opposed to the one that won 4 straight. 6 assists, that was a season low. More turnovers than assists. This was from John Clay's blog yesterday. It was an interesting number in the Herald-Leader. More turnovers than assists, Kentucky 6-8 in those situations this season. When they have more assists than turnovers, they're 11-1. Pretty strong difference there between those two numbers for just the simple assist-to-turnover ratio. But this is a team, you know, defensively, they played poorly. Florida, a very perimeter-oriented team, so maybe it's a bad matchup for Kentucky. The zone got Kentucky back into the game, but during that stretch when Florida couldn't make shots, Kentucky couldn't take advantage of it. There was an opportunity there to make a run at the Gators, and Kentucky did not execute well enough offensively to take advantage of that opportunity that it had. One thing that Calipari told me in the post-game interview that we did on the UK radio network, and he didn't say this in the media session, but I thought it was noteworthy. He said they didn't scrimmage as much leading into this game. And you think back to last week before the Ole Miss game. He said, I'm backing off a little bit. We'll see if it's the right move. It may not be. And maybe it wasn't. So we'll see. Cal talks today on the SEC teleconference and then the coaches show tonight. We'll see if he talks about that. I would suspect they'll probably go back to scrimmaging more this week. You know, with a young team, it's a trial and error approach sometimes. So it could end up, if Kentucky turns this around, plays well out in St. Louis, that this turns out to be a good thing. You know, they got beat a lot more soundly than this in that final game in 2014 down in Gainesville, and we know what that team did. So I wouldn't write them off yet just because of what you saw on Saturday. A couple of other quick things. Mentioned the start of spring football practice. Baseball continues to roll, 11-1 now after pounding Louisiana yesterday, 10-4. So they swept the three games down in Houston. Justin Lewis got the win on the mound. Luke Heyer had four hits. T.J. Collette had a homer and two doubles. Softball wins 11-1 over Ohio, 11-2 over Southeast Missouri. And men's tennis, 4-0 over Alabama. Heading to a break. Links to the stories that we talk about each day can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. It's the Leach Report Radio Network. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. And when we come back, Sean Farnham from the SEC Network.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
Sean Farnham joins us from the SEC Network. Where does championship week have you, Mr. Farnham?
I just want to know, how come in all the years that I've come to Kentucky and I've sat like four chairs away from you, have you never offered me some of that delicious-sounding beef jerky that you were selling there?
Well, we will hook you up. We will hook you up.
I mean,
it is good stuff.
As you said, you can even eat it when you're working out.
Yes, it is. It is great for that. So, and our producer who called you will attest to that. So yes, we will hook you up. You got that?
All right, good. I just want to make sure that for Champ Week that I'm ready to go, and I've got all the fuel necessary to get through this week.
We'll send you a Mingy beef jerky care package. Where do we send it?
St. Louis, because we'll all be there.
But aren't you doing a game tonight, or was it yesterday you did a game?
Well, tonight I'm doing a game. I've got the SoCon Championship game in Asheville, North Carolina, between UNCG and East Tennessee State University. So a rematch of last year's title game. It'll be a lot of fun. I actually enjoy doing this every single year. ESPN sends us to do a smaller conference championship game. And, you know, for the SEC tournament this week, there's, you know, eight teams that think they're already in the NCAA tournament. One that's, I think, a question mark heading in. But seven teams for sure feel really comfortable right now. So even if you lose, you're like, yeah, well, we're still playing next week. For these guys, this is it. This is 40 minutes tonight for their dream. 40 minutes to play in the NCAA tournament. 40 minutes for their chance to play against a team from the SEC. So really going to be a lot of fun tonight here in Asheville. It'll be on ESPN2, tip-off at 9 p.m. Eastern time.
Yeah, and I was yesterday watching. I watched Cincinnati-Wichita State, which was a great game, and then I flipped over, watched the second half of Liberty and Radford in the Big South Final, which I would never watch during the regular season, but there's so much on the line, and just because of what you're talking about, for these kids, it's their shot, and a kid from Radford, you know, hits a shot, it goes through the net at 0.0 on the clock, and it was the first time they go in 9 years, and it was just a really cool moment to watch unfold, so I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, it's and that's what's great about Champ Week, and we're going to see all that. A lot of great games, a lot of good teams that are fighting for the opportunity, and then we'll get to the heavy hitters as the week goes on.
Well, let's talk a little bit about St. Louis, and there was a lot of twists and turns to this season. I mean, here in Lexington, all the Kentucky fans followed it with their team, but just about every team in the league had rough patches. Tennessee even started out 0-2 in their season. Who is the team that you think is most dangerous heading into this week?
Well, just thinking about this, let's go back to the rough patches and the chaos that we saw. Only two teams in the conference did not have a three-game losing streak. They're the two teams that shared the title. Everybody else had at least a three-game losing streak over the course of the season. So inconsistency has been there for everyone. And that's just been because a lot of it, too, and this is the thing that we try to talk about during the air, and maybe we've done a good job, maybe we haven't on ESPN, but some of the so-called inconsistencies come from the fact that this conference is that much better. I mean, you see it, and you know it because you're there every single game, but this conference is vastly improved from where it's been over the last 3 years, and so when you have an improved conference the way that this one has, you're going to take some losses, your scheduling is going to come up, and it's going to bite you. And you're going to be like, okay, does that mean the sky's falling? No, it just means you pick it back up and you just keep moving forward. Now, in regards to this week, look, if you're Tennessee, I think you're feeling really comfortable right now. Tennessee has played the most consistent basketball. They play with the best motor. Obviously, they beat Kentucky twice. But Admiral Schofield and Grant Williams, those two guys leading the way with their experience. I think they're as good as anybody, but my take has been Kentucky, and it has stayed Kentucky ever since John Calipari made the lineup change to spend more time with Quade Green, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, P.J. Washington, Kevin Knox, and then Jared Vanderbilt. I like that lineup best, and when they play that lineup, to me, they're a different team. And so I like that, and I think even off the loss to Florida, that doesn't change my perspective. I like their route that they have. It'll be very interesting to see if Michael Porter does indeed actually even play this week. If he does, how much more excitement can we add to the tournament? But I still like Kentucky's path, and I think they're going to end up winning the tournament championship this year.
Wow. Is there one guy in that group of five you mentioned most important to make that group click for Kentucky, or is it just the fact that they need those five to play long stretches together?
Well, I would say that Jared Vanderbilt and his willingness to be a rebounder first and foremost and a defensive player, that has added a dimension underneath that was much needed. Somebody that really attacks the glass. And because you've got guys on the outside that are athletic enough and can run the floor, you've got spacing, the organization within the offense with the two guards I think is crisper and better. So I don't think it's necessarily one guy as much as it is that the collection group just gels. It just blends. But Jared would be the one guy, if I had to put my finger on, just based on his statistics and what he brings to the table and the skill set that he's been willing to prove consistently to play.
Who's the team that's fifth or lower, so if somebody's playing on Thursday or even Wednesday, that you think has the best shot to get through to the semifinals on Saturday, in other words, upset one of the top four seeds and maybe even make it to Sunday?
With or without Michael Porter?
I will say without.
Okay, let's go without Michael Porter. I'll go Texas A&M. They've won three in a row. T.J. Starks has really solidified their guard play. Now, he's turnover prone. He's also ejection prone, as we found out on Saturday against Alabama. I had that game. So he lets his emotions get the better of him. But he has provided a scoring punch at the point guard position that they haven't had all season long. They still have the best front court in the SEC with Tyler Davis and Robert Williams, when they're both engaged and they want to play. This was a team in the non-conference that dominated. Injuries, suspensions, all the things that they've gone through down in College Station this year. If DJ Hogue and Admon Gilder, Tyler Davis, and Robert Williams just play up to their capabilities, this is still a team that can make a run. And also, I like their matchup against Auburn. Remember, they beat Auburn at Auburn. And although Bryce Brown didn't play the entire second half in that game, it was because of their size and being able to throw over the top. Auburn's not getting taller between now and Friday.
And by the way you framed up the answer, I'm assuming if Michael Porter Jr. does play, that you think they're a threat to Kentucky?
They would be a threat to Kentucky, yes. Based on defense, toughness, size, matchup ability, it would be really interesting to see, though, how their offense flows. Again, nobody really knows because the last time we saw him on the court was only for 2 minutes. To start the season, and before that, the best sample size was an exhibition game against Kansas. So, I don't know how their offense would flow. I don't know how the chemistry would be, but I do know this. They have seven players right now with Colin Van Leer going down with a torn ACL that are scholarship athletes. They're not beating Kentucky with that, and I'm not sure that they could beat Georgia or Vanderbilt with that. And this is a team that's trying to improve its seeding. I think it locked it up its NCAA tournament bid with the home win against Arkansas. But to improve your seeding, you need Michael Porter out on the floor right now. And we'll see how that plays off.
The awards, I guess, will come out today or tomorrow for the SEC. Who do you think is Player of the Year in the league this year?
Deontay Maiton. And I know it's hard to say that because of the lack of team success, right? You always usually want to go with a team, especially finished in the top half of the conference. But I think if you take Deontay Maiton off of Georgia, where are they? And night in and night out, he was the most consistent, most dominating presence out on the floor. And he deserves the award. And so I go with Deontay Maiton.
Sean, I appreciate the time. We'll watch for you tonight in the SoCon final and then see you in St. Louis.
All right, beef jerky in St. Louis. You going to bring it?
I am going to work on that today. we'll have it for you.
All right.
Sounds good. Travel safe.
I'll see you guys in St. Louis. We'll meet under the arch, okay?
There you go. Sean Farnham. Right. You can see him on ESPN tonight with the Southern Conference final and then on the SEC Network coverage of the SEC tournament out in St. Louis. Jen Smith, next up. It's the Leach Report Radio Network, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at Tom Leach, KY.
We'll take a detour from Championship Week for a moment and bring in Jen Smith from the Lexington Herald Leader to talk a little UK football as spring practice is getting underway. Coach Stoops going to step to the mic here in about 20 minutes for his first news conference. Jen, will quarterbacks be the first question, or will it take longer to get to quarterbacks?
My first question is, if you're handing out beef jerky, how do you get more of that? Because I've never been offered that either. Sorry.
We'll just have to spread it around.
Maybe the spring game. Is that the next time I'm going to see you?
There you go, yes.
My guess is quarterbacks will be in the top three questions, probably the first one, but you never know. Sometimes people slide in a weird start to the spring question.
That is,
we don't bring it up before we ask a question. Who knows?
Well, that's probably true. It's certainly going to be the dominant storyline for fans, isn't it?
Yeah, it's funny. A couple years ago, I kept remembering how when Drew Barker was named the starter sort of, at the end of the season, he was like, you guys aren't even asking about quarterbacks anymore. I feel like this isn't really a spring or this isn't really a fall. And we went through it, and Drew was out within two games. So it's just sort of funny how that turns out. And this will be the dominant storyline. I mean, you've got a guy in Gunnar Hoke who has been in the system for 2 years. He's been through several spring games, several spring practices. Sort of knows the playbook, the guys involved, knows all of those things. And then you've got kind of a wild card in Terry Wilson, who seems an awful lot like a Steven Johnson, who sort of fits into that hole left by Steven Johnson and sort of makes you wonder, who's going to be the guy.
You can read at KentuckySports.com Jen's pre-spring analysis, which focuses on five of the key questions for Kentucky football. We'll talk a little bit about that when we come back and continue this discussion. It's spring practice starts today for the Wildcats. They'll take a break for spring break, and it all culminates in the middle of April with the Friday night blue-white game. We're going to take a quick break. Back with more from Jen Smith a little later. Fletcher Page on the Leach Report Radio Network.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Coming up next, it's Kentucky Sports Radio with Matt Jones.
Second half of our show for this Monday, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. We have Jen Smith for a few more minutes from the Lexington Herald Leader, KentuckySports.com, before we turn her loose to Mark Stoops and his pre-spring football news conference. I guess I say pre. Did they practice already this morning?
Yeah, it looked like they were practicing this morning based on all the tweets from players saying they had to get up early. So, yeah, they practiced this morning.
I had a question from a listener. I'll get your take on from Michael. He says, do you think there's any chance they would go with a split quarterback situation with Wilson and Hoke? Says he's not usually a fan of that, but when done right, it can work well.
Yeah, I think they ultimately would like to have a go-to guy, the guy that's going to be their quarterback. But, Darren Henshaw's done a really good job of sort of prepping the next guy for the assignment. So, maybe they'll see some packages they like for one or something to that effect. But I can't imagine a situation where they would do, two series for Wilson and two series for Hoke. That just doesn't seem to be the way that Eddie Grant and Darren Henshaw would do it.
Let's go through what you wrote for today at the Herald Leader. about the questions going into spring. One of them about special teams, and it's kind of an overlooked position, the kicker position, I think. There's a lot of focus on the new Australian punter, but Austin McGinnis was darn near automatic and had some huge kicks, and that's a for all the focus on quarterback, that's probably an even bigger pair of shoes to fill.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they had a true freshman punter come in a couple of years ago and Grant McInnes, and everybody just thought, oh, it's a punter. They're going to find a great punter. They're going to put him in, and everything's going to be okay. And it didn't go that well for Kentucky that season. He was the worst punter in the league statistically. So I think that special teams is one of those things that everybody sort of says, oh, well, they'll just find the best kicker, or they'll find the best punter, and they'll just put him in. And it doesn't always work that way, especially in the SEC. You know, I'm not sure the kicker situation is going to be sorted out until, you know, well into the summer, because they don't have a kicker on campus that's full-time or full-time scholarship. Sorry. But I do think that the punter, you know, the punter issue will probably start to sort itself out during the spring. They have both of them on campus, including the Aussie punter who took the number of the current Aussie punter, or the just current Aussie punter who graduated. So I think that will be a position that they sort of settle out pretty quickly. But you're right about Austin McGinnis. I mean, he leaves the program as the leading scorer of all time by a pretty good margin. And you wouldn't even have to watch the extra points. You would just sort of look down and start working on your notes for the next series. And I'm not sure that is something that's always great. I mean, look at a team like Georgia struggled for years to find a kicker that could sort of be consistent. And Kentucky has to have that in order to compete in the SEC.
Yeah, and you can almost look down on field goals at stretches with Austin. And this is a coaching staff that plays the game in such a way, you know, I think with more of the wide open, you know, air raid type stuff, it lends itself to more games with bigger spreads positively and negatively. You're going to have, I think, we've seen, a lot of close games. And so that right leg of the kicker, or left leg in some cases, becomes even more important.
Yeah, I mean, look at the season where Austin McGinnis had that injury. He had, I think it was a hamstring injury for a season. And Kentucky, you know, was a couple yards off on, you know, on field position in a lot of spots and a lot of games. And it could have cost them the game. I think you could argue that it cost them a game in a couple different games. They need field position to win the game. And then punting is a huge big deal with Mark Stoops. He wants the team pinned back at the 10 or less. He wants to play field position. That's how he thinks that you can dominate in the SEC. And I think that's a valuable point.
A couple of points that you touch on your story on the defensive side. One's linebacker. Can Cash Daniels step into Courtney Love's spot? I certainly hope so, because he will be, I think, a quote machine for covering the team. And the more prominent his role is, the better, I think, from that standpoint. And then defensive back development. Give me your take on those two areas.
You know, I wasn't really concerned about linebackers sort of going into the spring. I thought that was a spot where they could sort of work in Cash and then a different guy who had a different skill set, and maybe they could rotate them in and out depending on opponent and scheme that they're playing against. But, you know, the fact that Eli Brown left, you know, sort of unexpectedly a couple weeks ago, that leaves just Jordan Jones as the only guy that's played significant minutes in this scenario in the middle of the field, which is, you know, such a key spot, especially against the run in the SEC. And Jordan, you know, has been prone to making some mistakes that cost him game time. Jordan has been prone to injury, at least last season. So you could have a scenario where maybe you have Cash Daniel or a freshman or a redshirt freshman, and then a true freshman, you know, playing in that other weak side linebacker spot. And that seems like a thing that maybe Mark Stoops did not anticipate happening, but probably should be, you know, kind of worried about going into the spring.
Did you gain any insight into what motivated Eli Brown's decision?
I think he was just not happy. I mean, I think that's sort of what I heard from people in the background, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him land, you know, somewhere closer to home.
And then the last point you bring up in your story is about the wide receiver position and just the need for consistency. They get Dorian Baker back, which should solidify things, but there was a lot of excitement heading into the season about that freshman group, and nobody really made a big splash, consistently anyway.
No, and I have to wonder how much of that was Steven Johnson being injured, how much of it was Benny Snell coming forward, you know, how much of it was Was it potentially coaching? Because Stoops obviously, you know, didn't keep the wide receivers coach on staff. And I think that a lot of times guys don't play as well as freshmen, you know, in the SEC. And maybe this is the year where they make that leap as sophomores. I think, you know, Lynn Bowden making a leap is a really good thing for Kentucky football. And they need a long threat. They need a guy who can go long like Jeff Badette did and break open some defenses and make room for Benny Snell to do what Benny Snell does. So those wide receivers don't have a ton of numbers either, so they can't really get I think they have 10 or 11 on scholarship right now. They're going to have to find a scenario where they have guys on the field that they trust, that can make plays, and they can, you know, break the field open.
Well, I know you have to move into news conference mode and get ready for what our friend Mr. Maggard refers to as launching a tweet-a-lanch, so we'll let you do that. Thank you for the time.
Sure. Have a good day.
You too. You can read the story we were referencing at KentuckySports.com. Follow her at Jen Herald Leader all through spring practice for the updates. We're heading to a break. Fletcher Page from the Courier-Journal's next up. Back to basketball in Kentucky and SEC Tournament Week when we return. It's the Leach Report Radio Network, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington in Palomar, and the Hamburg Center open 7 days a week. Locally owned and operated for breakfast, brunch, and lunch. And if you get folks over to watch games this weekend, let them cater. Everybody will love the food from Wild Eggs. We'll be right back.
You're tuned to Talk Radio 1080 and The Leach Report. And visit TomLeachKY.com for more news and views on the Cats.
15 away from the top of the hour, it's the Monday edition of The Leach Report. And we have the latest bracketology from Joe Lenardi. Dozens of people do these bracket projections. Joe is one of the first, and I think does a really good job with it. Anyway, for what it's worth, he has Kentucky now projected as a 6 seed, playing in Nashville against the winner of Texas and Southern Cal, and then advancing likely to meet a 3rd-seeded Michigan State, with North Carolina also on that side of the bracket as the 2 seed. So, again, all of this stuff is for what it's worth. I think the guys doing the brackets have probably got a better shot of hitting the seed line right than necessarily the placement. But we'll see. It all plays. We'll know this Sunday night. Fletcher Page joins us from Courier-Journal.com. Fletcher, if you're one who puts your faith in Joe, and I haven't seen any others yet, but it would suggest that Kentucky should certainly avoid an early exit from the SEC tournament out in St. Louis to protect a spot maybe in the 4 or 5 range, right?
Yeah, definitely. And that's an interesting placement, though, to be a 6 seed in Nashville.
Yeah.
I wonder if Kentucky fans would have the ability for Kentucky to play in Nashville as a 6 seed, then maybe out in San Diego or Boise as a 4 or 5. That's interesting. I still think Kentucky will be a 5, and I think I'll probably be booking a flight out west.
I would agree with that as well. I think they'll win at least on Friday, and I think they'll probably be a 5, and if they would get to Sunday, they might even be able to play up to a 4, depending on what else is out there. I don't know. I don't think they get any higher than that after the loss on Saturday.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I really like Kentucky's chances in 2 of the 3 potential games that they'll get. I like them to beat Missouri if that's who they play. And then I think they can knock off Auburn. But I think Tennessee is the team right now that would be pretty tough for Florida for Kentucky to beat this week.
Really, with the way the games played out once Missouri came to the rescue, it worked out really well for Kentucky, actually, I think, in terms of how the bracket played out for them.
Yeah, certainly. I think it really works out for them better to be the 4 than it would have the 3. I think that gives them an opportunity to get to Sunday.
So with Kentucky now, from what you've seen, we saw bad Kentucky in the losing streak. We saw good Kentucky in the winning streak that followed, and then a clunker on Saturday to finish up. Cal talked about used the word that revert was the big word. It's not tweak, but revert this year, and they reverted against Florida. So what did you see, and what needs to turn around this week in St. Louis?
Yeah, I thought offensively, I thought briefly to start the game, I mean, they weren't great, but there did seem to be some cohesion and connection, and then it just sort of went away. And so that's how you end up with only 6 assists for the game, which is a major indicator that the offense wasn't moving well. But then, too, when Quade Green goes 3 for 3 from 3, early, and he doesn't even attempt another shot from deep. It just felt like things weren't right. And I don't know the answer to how it can quickly go from Kentucky scoring 87, 87, 96, and I believe 81 during the win streak to not being able to get to 70. I don't know what causes them. It looked like they were five players out there again instead of one offense. And I'm not sure why that was and why that happened. Maybe they certainly got punched in the mouth by Florida. And maybe they went, I'm still trying to understand if it's a selfishness or an insecurity, one or the other, but something that makes it feel like the players kind of go into maybe they're trying to do too much. Maybe they're trying to will the offense on their own instead of letting it sort of flow and be natural. I don't know what causes it, Tom, but you can definitely tell that it's going on when it's happening.
Individually, they are talented guys. They're just not quite, the Anthony Davis level first year players that Cal has had on some of his past teams, but they're talented. But the point I'm leading to is that while talented, when they play as individuals, it becomes a mediocre team. When they play together, then I think they're a team that has a shot at beating about anybody in the country on a given night.
I agree with that. I think really the turning point, I believe, was when Florida was able to get P.J. Washington and Jeremy Vanderbilt, mm-hmm. but each with two fouls. That line, the lineup was Shea, Quade, Kevin Knox, P.J. and Jared. That lineup, the offense moves so fluid when they're out there because I think Jared obviously has accepted his role as a rebounder. P.J. understands he's got to drive the ball. Kevin's doing what he does. And Quade is their best long-range shooter, and he's able to play off the ball. And it looks like a very fluid offense. If those guys get in foul trouble, though, and then Cal's trying to work with, he's still trying to bring Hami along, he's still trying to bring Nick Richards along, Sasha Kalea Jones is not playing much. Whenever he's trying to use those lineups, it just looks like it looks way more individual than it does collective.
I went back and watched a good chunk of the game yesterday, and you just see, when that group of five that you referenced is out there, I mean, they consistently were scoring five guys in double figures, and there's, probably any one of them could, maybe other than Jared, you could easily see getting 20 on a given night. And then when those guys aren't able to play together for long stretches, you'd look out there on the court Saturday, and just especially in rewatching it, he's like, okay, where are they going to get points with that group out there?
Exactly, and that's been the biggest issue. I think Cal hit on that after a game.
And I think that may be where my guess is that's probably, it's not so much selfishness, is where it's guys thinking they're trying to find a way to win. They don't fully trust everybody when it's some of those combinations are out there.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, Cal said during the winning streak that, previously during the season, the coaching staff was really worried about they're going to get in some games where they only score in the 60s and they're going to lose. And that's essentially what happened at Florida. That lineup that they've hit on, it's not necessarily consistent defensively. But again, if you're shooting 87 points, that's fine. You'll give up a few baskets.
Yeah.
So I think that the key there really now is those guys have got to stay out of foul trouble. And I think teams are going to target PJ and Jared as often as possible to try to draw them into fouls.
Yeah, it's funny as we talk about this back in August, September, we were all looking at this team thinking, with all that length, this could be one of Cal's best defensive teams, and they're certainly built to be a great defensive team. And as we sit here going into the tournaments, we're kind of in agreement that their best offensive team is what it gives them the best chance to advance.
Right. Yeah, I actually spoke to Chris Chioza, the Florida senior guard. I spoke to him after the game. I asked him what he thought Kentucky's weaknesses were defensively, or what Florida was trying to attack. And I thought it was interesting that he said that obviously Florida plays up tempo anyway, but he said they wanted to get out and transition as much as possible against Kentucky, and that their goal was to go to the rim. He said usually they're trying to spot up for threes in transition, but he said they actually played inside out. Felt like their length would bother three-point shots, so they actually went to the bucket, and that might explain some of the foul trouble. They certainly were driving the ball, but Florida still ended up with 10 three-pointers, and they shot at a much better clip than previous opponents have shot against Kentucky. That's just the one area of their length.
You know, they can take away the long range shot, but I thought it was interesting that Florida actually wanted to play as fast as possible against Kentucky, who should be really good in transition, and against Florida they just weren't.
It speaks to why maybe the zone worked well for Kentucky in the second half.
I think that slowed Florida down. I mean, that stretch, Florida hit 16 of 18 shots, and obviously some of that's Florida's offense, and some of that's Kentucky's defense. But when they went to the zone, I think Florida missed 10 straight shots and went a long time without scoring, because it certainly did slow the game down.
Yeah, and that's when Kentucky was kind of shooting itself in the foot at times with mistakes and turnovers. And there were so many times that you talked about quad A and threes. There was a play in the first half, not to pick on Kevin Knox, but he gets out on a break, and he drives into three people. And you just rewatching the game yesterday, quad A is wide open over on the wing. Another time, mm-hmm. Shea penetrates into the elbow, takes a contested elbow jumper, and you got Knox on one wing and quad A on the other, both coming open. And it's just so many of those, they'll point them out in film sessions, but that the team that makes those extra passes is the team that can score in the 80s.
Exactly, and we saw that happen in that four-game winning streak. Those passes were made, and I do think sometimes that Shea gets a bad rap. I mean, he had five turnovers. I think sometimes, though, whenever the connection is lost and whenever the communication seems to be faltering, it sort of just falls on Shea to sort of make something happen. Right, and he ends up with five turnovers, and I agree with you. I think sometimes everybody on this team forces shots, but I thought Shea, his turnovers were indicative of a team that just was not getting the looks that they normally want. Shea trying to do anything he could to create.
Fletcher Page, you can read him at career-journal.com. Safe travels to St. Louis.
All right, thanks for having me.
This is Fletcher Page. We're heading to a break. We'll come back and wrap up this edition of the Leach Report Radio Network, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Not a slice of Wildcat history. This day in 2003 was senior day for the Wildcats. Keith Bogans and crew that went on that long winning streak to move to the top of the polls. They celebrated senior day by taking on the Vanderbilt Commodores and beating them 106-44 at Rupp Arena. Coach Cal is tweeting out a prayer request today for Dr. Pierce Lyons of All-Tech, guy who's a gentleman who has done an amazing amount of good things in our state, and he's in a battle with some complications from open heart surgery, according to Cal's tweet. So put him on your prayer list today for Dr. Lyons. Cats go out to St. Louis on Wednesday. They'll play on Friday, likely against Missouri if seeds hold. But again, I think Georgia's dangerous in that part of the bracket too. We will be out there, I think, on Friday for the first time to do the show. Be here in studio up until then. Tomorrow, John Gassaway from ESPN. Talk a little bit about the tournament week and the bubble watch and the Cats. Larry Vaught as well coming up tomorrow. And John Clay. And then Ian Eagle from CBS going to join us on Wednesday.
Thanks the Leach Report, tournament week. Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow the Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to Leach.